Okay, so what I'm going to be doing today is I'm going to be talking about the platform for Metrostyle apps that I just showed you a moment ago. And first, I want to put that in a little bit of context before I drill into any more detail. First of all, obviously, we've had an amazing success with Windows, and in particular with Windows 7. There's over 500 million Windows 7 machines out there. There's 500 million Windows 7 machines shipped in just about 18 months. If you add in all the other Windows machines, it comes to over a billion Windows machines that are out there today. That's considerably more than any other system that's out there, any other computing type that's out there. In fact, it's a bit more than if you add all the Android machines together, all the Apple machines together, it's actually more than that as well. So, you know, it's a considerable number of machines. We've always had an amazing success with that. And you know, we are committed to continuing building on that success. But we've realized that technology is changing. The marketplace is changing. What's going on is changing very rapidly. I'm very lucky. I've been in computing for about 37, 38 years now in total. And the reason I'm still in computing and still in software is because things do change all the time. It's an incredibly dynamic industry. But really, we're going through a really fundamental change at the moment. And Microsoft believes this as well. And that is, you know, originally, when I first started, I was on mainframes, okay? And I saw the PC coming along, and I said, hey, you know what? This is the wave of the future back in the 70s. And I moved across onto the PC, and most people thought I was crazy. But I said, no, the PC's the important platform. I actually designed part of the original PC. It's a long, long time ago. And I was committed. I really believed that the industry was going to go through a change. Of course, that was right. And then about 10 years later on, of course, the PC NT came out, and the PC started to be used in the enterprise to replace mainframes. And I was actually working for IBM at the time, and I told very senior people in IBM that the PC was going to replace the mainframe. And they said I was crazy. And I was absolutely insane, and clearly it was never going to happen. And I genuinely believed it when I looked at NT 3.5, this was, in fact, those days. And of course, I was right. And in fact, I was so convinced I left. I said, if you don't believe me, I'm going to leave and go and work for Microsoft, which is when I joined Microsoft. And so, you know, I went through that change where we started to see the replacement of the mainframes by Windows servers. And I worked all the way through that at the beginning of my time at Microsoft. And then about 8 years ago, I realized there was another major change going on, and that was this whole mobility change. I remember getting my first smartphone, Windows CE phone, and going, you know, this is actually going to change the way the industry is and the way that change the way people work. And so I moved across to working on mobile phones in those days, and then following on from that, stores and so on and so forth, and strategy for those areas. And yet again, I've been shown to be right. We as a company have been working now on a mobile strategy and our tablet strategy for a while. We got, I think it's well understood, that we sort of got caught out a few years back with the phone. In fact, actually, I was working with the phone group at that time, and I can tell you what went on, but basically, we had a lot of troubles with the engineering at that time, which was why we sort of missed that cycle. And so we got behind, which is why we're not as far ahead as we would like with the phone today. But at the same time we went back, and this was two, 3 years ago now, we went back to Windows itself and said, what does mobility mean for Windows itself? What is going to happen when we start seeing mobile Windows running on mobile devices, on tablets, and so on and so forth? And so we started, this was just at the end of the Windows 7 development phase, and so we started to work on what our plans were for the tablet-type devices. This is actually before the tablets were out, really, in any great amount. And we started to build what we felt was going to be needed. And we also feel that as we're going through such a large shift, that we needed to make some really radical modifications to the user interface. Because the last time we changed the user interface was 95, 17 years ago now. So it was a long time ago that we last seriously changed the user interface. We felt the user interface was certainly not applicable for tablet computing. And we wanted to do a lot more, which is what I've showed you, what I just showed you, which is our Metro experience. So that's what we thought about in terms of what we feel is going to happen in the UI. We'll go into that in more detail. In terms of the hardware, we're seeing, even more rapid change in terms of the chip technologies, SoIC and Arm, of course, in terms of the connectivity technologies, in terms of the UI, obviously touch, but things like accelerometers, those sort of devices as well, we're seeing built into these tablets. Not that one, but the more expensive ones. So we need to actually work out how we can support those and how we can give developers the ability to support those in some easy way. We also realized that we had to come up with some way of making sure that the machine is much more bulletproof than it has been in the past. Obviously, the store is a big part of that, but also how we design applications has got to be a part of that. And I want to talk about that in a lot more detail. So that's what's been happening down at the hardware side of things, and that's what's been happening in terms of the UI. But for us as developers, and I hasten to add, it's been a long while since I did production code, but this is my background is in development. For us as developers, we also need a new platform to work forward on as well. But at the same time, we still need to make sure that we support the work we've done in the past, the applications and the skills we've got. And this is a key part of what we're doing with Windows. In Metro, you can see I can flip back to the standard desktop experience. I can use my keyboard, I can use my mouse. We still support the old Windows and the old Windows way of doing things, but we also have this new method. And the same thing's true the same thing's true on hardware. These are Intel devices, but of course we're going to support Arm and SoIC. And then finally, in the development space, it's very important that we continue to support what we've done in the past, but at the same time provide a pathway through to the future. And so we've looked at what we want to make sure we can support. And we've looked and said, actually, people really want to support their skills. As a developer, as well as I do, it takes a long time and a lot of energy and a lot of work to get your skills up in a particular language or a particular API set or so on and so forth. And you really want to make sure that that's supported going forwards. And so with Windows, and in particular with Windows RT, the new runtime, we are making sure that we're supporting pretty well most people. So for instance, on the front end, we're supporting XAML, we're supporting HTML, HTML5, in particular, CSS3. Okay, so if you're used to working with those as front-end technologies, we're going to support you, and we will continue to support you. Those are very important technologies to us. If you're a more in-depth programmer, or you have more development-type skills and design skills, then we're going to support JavaScript, obviously, and continue to work with the JavaScript area. We're going to support C Sharp. So all those people from the .NET land who are C Sharp programmers, we will continue to support that. We'll also support C++. How many people here are JavaScript programmers? Okay, I know nothing about JavaScript, so how many people are C Sharp? Okay, C++? I'm a C++ guy, anyway. unfortunately, all the demos are in JavaScript and C Sharp. I have Hello World in C++, and that's it. But anyway, so it's important that we support those languages going forward, and we continue to enhance those languages. And we just really recently in Redmond had a big event called Going Native, which is about the enhancements we're supporting for C++ 11. It was very interesting, very exciting, a conference that we had there, all the big names, and there was a lot of stuff that they talked about that made me feel very old because I had not a clue what they were talking about. But it was certainly we are intending to support all of those languages going forwards. Okay, so that's where we are. What's that going to actually look like in terms of programming? Okay, so we have this tagline: Reimagined, Windows 8 Reimagined. We're reimagining what the developer experience is, what the user experience is, what the hardware experience is. All those things we are reimagining and changing and thinking about new things. So I'm going to drive straight into a demo here. Incidentally, those people that use Kindle for reading books, it came out last night. So what I have here is Visual Studio 11 Express Edition. So let me a quick talk about the tools. Just as we continue to support, you know, the languages, we also intend to continue to support the tools and enhance the tools as well. And in particular, we're providing more and more functionality into our Express editions. Express editions are the free editions of the Visual Studio toolset, and we're providing more and more functionality in those. So, for instance, we're providing a XAML design surface in here. This is actually coming from Blend. Okay, so when you go into Visual Studio, this is 11. When you're in the designer, you'll see a design surface come up, so you can actually go and start designing things very simply. And in particular, let's say this is from Blend. Now, I hasten to add, I'm not a designer at all. So I know very little about this. I'm going to do some design demos of Blend. Last time I did any design, I hate to say, was Front Page. And I used to struggle because what I designed was completely out of sync with what actually ended up on the web page. Now we've got a lot better at that. I have to say I haven't done anything seriously in Blend, so I can't tell you where we are. But I will want to show you with Blend later on some of the things that we're doing to make sure that you have a much better what you see is what you get type experience from Blend. So this is Visual Studio as it comes up, and you now have, if you go File New, oh, that's one of the other things you probably just saw then. We also now support, we're supporting Team Foundation Service, so we can do team project-based type activities inside Visual Studio in the Express Edition, right? And you can see that I'm not actually connected to the server at the moment, which is why I threw that error. And you'll see that error going on a number of times. Okay, so let's not do that then. So what we have here is just a blank project really that I've just fired up. And it's just one of the standard console projects. And what I've done is I've put a little button on here called Click Me. And you can see here's the code for it in the middle here. Okay, and I can just move this around. My machines start up. That's strange. What's going on here? Thank you. I didn't think I'd left that running. Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, so here's the code down at the bottom here, and then you can actually see the code itself. All it does is just puts up Hello World. So it's a very simple Hello World application. Okay, let's actually run this. Okay, and it flips it into the Metro mode. This is actually not a very powerful machine either. I normally do application development on a big desktop, not a tiddly little. This is a 1.2 gig Celeron processor machine. Okay, so it comes up, it's got a Click Me button, you click on it, and it puts up Hello World. Really, really simple piece of C++. But the key thing about this particular application, or this particular couple of lines of code that I want you to take away, is that actually it's really, really standard C++. A very standard C++ look and feel to it. You can see in here, you know, I'm just using standard C++ syntax, message dialogues, and so on and so forth. These are being provided now by a thing called WinRT, which is our new runtime. A couple of things in here that are less familiar, async, and I'll be talking a lot about async later on, because the whole of Metro is about async processing. We have to try and make sure, in order to get the sort of experience you're seeing, we have to make sure that everything's done asynchronously. So pretty well all the calls in Metro are asynchronous calls, and that's actually how we get the sort of performance. One of the other things I just want to call out is that there's this new in here, which is actually about doing some garbage collection and cleanup that we need to provide, not so much in C++, but certainly in C# we have to do that. And so some stuff goes on under the hood, and I'll talk in more detail about how all this works inside, actually in order to do a lot of the sort of runtime type activity. WinRT is slightly different from .NET in that, and in some of the ways it works, it has to be slightly different in order, again, to get this sort of performance. So that gives you a quick idea of a very simple Hello World program in C++, very standard language. The key thing to take away from this is that, you know, we've made very little changes to the standard language, right? Okay, so what are we actually doing underneath the languages and so on and so forth to make all this work? And the investments we're putting in is, first of all, this thing called the Windows runtime, right? And this is a whole new runtime, ships as part of Windows 8. It provides the sort of functionality, say, that you expect from a runtime. So it provides a lot of the, in the C++ spaces, it provides a CLR type functionality. It also provides a set of APIs through to the new hardware. In the past, actually talking to hardware from Windows was very difficult. And as we realized that people are putting more and more hardware into things like tablets, things like accelerometers, gyroscopes, GPSs, and so on and so forth, we need to actually wrap those up so you can use them much more quickly and easily. So that the Windows RT does that as well. We're providing this new application environment. Again, how many people here have programmed for phones? Any of the smartphones that are out there. You'll find that there are some differences when you start programming for phones, insofar as, again, a phone actually expects to have a pretty well instant response. You know, if your application shouldn't hang the phone call up or anything like that. So again, in phone programming, you have to actually try and make sure that you release the resources all the time, that you do things asynchronously and so on and so forth. And that's really what our new application environment is going to be doing for you. And I'm going to talk a lot more about that going forwards. User experience, again, showed you a quick overview of what that user experience looks like. It's actually very important to us, and I think to everybody in the ecosystem, to make sure that we fit in with the general look and feel of the Windows Metro applications. If you have an application that suddenly comes up and takes over the whole screen, if you have an application that comes up and starts flashing logos at you, then it's not going to be good for... It might be good for you, if whatever it is you're selling, but it won't be good in general, because it will actually make people turn off from your application. They'll switch things off, they'll start switching off the platform itself. So I'm going to talk a lot more about how we build applications that give you the right look and feel that fit in with the other applications, so we all have a standard look and feel to the way the applications work, but at the same time, you can actually show how your application is doing the job it does better than anybody else's. And finally, we have the whole store area. Now, this is, again, well understood in the phone space. We need to make sure that you can get applications into a store, and we do the distribution for you. And of course, as part of that distribution, we have to do all the things like checking the application itself is a good application. We have to do the billing. We have to do the updates and so on and so forth, and the marketing and you know, pulling applications forward so that people can pick them up and use them. I've been working for the last 2 or 3 years on the whole store strategy inside Microsoft. And actually, funnily enough, the thing about stores that I think people don't realize, but the most difficult thing about a store isn't really the technical side of things, it's actually the business side of things. The billing in particular and payment is absolutely horrific, because you have to deal with every country. If you want to be global, and it's easy to do it in the US, you know, here we are, we'll just do the US, but you know, that cuts out a lot of the rest of the world, in fact, all of it. And so actually, we need to make sure we have all the billing and payment type support, and even that's not quite as bad as the fact we then have to deal with taxation. Again, if you don't have a presence in a particular country, then you can pretty well ignore the fact that that country's tax laws, right? You know, if you're just a US-based company and you only have a presence in the US, then you actually don't really have to care too much about upsetting the local government tax department. However, we have a presence here, it's a building and so on and so forth, and lots of good people here. We have to make sure that we meet those tax laws in the individual countries. And to do that in every country is just a huge amount of work. It's not very exciting work, but it has to be done. And it has been done. And we actually have announced that I think we're going to support pretty well every country but like 5. I had a look through the list, there's countries I never even heard of before. In there, and not only are we going to support those countries, we're going to be able to, yeah, and the 5 are like Iraq, Sudan, 2 or 3 others, I can't remember, but they're countries that won't allow American companies to import to them, right? So there's very few of them. Anyway, those are the ones we're not in support. Clearly, from a developer point of view, there's a lot of questions around, okay, so how do we make sure in a particular country, you know, you can get your developer ID, you can get your payments and so on and so forth, how we pay that back, it has to be done through the local bank and so on. So I'll talk a lot more about the store later on. But it is a nightmare to do it on a global scale. Okay. So that's the investments. What does the actual runtime platform end up looking like? This is Windows RT. Clearly we have the Windows Core OS services. Those are the services we've always had. Okay? They continue to be there, they're not changing. And of course that means you can take Windows 7 applications and you can run them. And I'm not going to be talking about the standard desktop applications. The applications that you see today on Windows 7 we call desktop applications. And I'm not really going to be talking about those anymore. You can be assured that they all work. Actually, they work a lot better, funnily enough. Windows 8, we've gone through, we've improved a lot of the underlying services that Windows provides. And so they actually run faster. In my experience, you'll find that applications run faster on Windows 8 than they do on 7, even in desktop mode. And they use a lot less battery life. We spend a lot of time trying to maximize the battery performance out of the operating system. One of the key elements that's been around building Intel or Wintel-based tablets has been battery life. The Intel processors themselves use quite a lot of power, and Windows uses quite a lot of power. So we've been around time and time again to decrease the power, and also the techniques I'm going to be talking about, in particular the async techniques, help a lot with decreasing the power in the machine as well. So if you want to get a machine that's going to run for 10 or 12 hours on a single battery, then you need to actually make modifications in your application, right? And again, I'll be talking about what those look like. But the actual core services are still there and still the same. And by the way, you can still go and write a Windows 7 application which drains the battery very, very quickly if you want. I'm not sure why you want to do that, but people write bad code. I write bad code. So. Okay, then we have this thing, the desktop applications. We have .NET, Silverlight with C# and VB on it. An application's built in that using XAML normally. You have C and C++ on top of Win32. And then finally you have JavaScript and HTML on top of Internet Explorer and the Internet Explorer engine. So that's Windows 7 land, right? Now what are we building? That will continue to be there. So what are we going to build in the future? We're adding in Windows RT. At the bottom, we have this new application model, asynchronous being one of the most important parts of it. On top of that, we have things like communication and data. This is something else that's very important to us. I talked earlier on about change and how the industry on the PC side has changed a lot in the last few years. Actually, of course, the same sort of thing has happened on the back end as well. And we've gone away from servers, managed servers, into the whole area of cloud computing and Windows Azure. And so we need to provide those Azure services, those cloud computing services, so you can actually go write applications in the cloud, get data down very quickly, and we need to have a very good linkage between Windows 8 and those cloud services. And that's certainly something that we're working very hard on. In fact, I think 2 days ago, we announced a toolkit for Windows 8 toolkit for Azure. And if you want to go and download that, you can actually go and fire it up and start building yourself an Azure backend to your Windows 8 application. Interesting enough, I didn't have time to actually get it going in this demonstration. I've been traveling a lot, but I wanted to download it so I could actually demonstrate that today, but I didn't have a chance. But do go and have a look. There's a rather good video on there, 3-minute video, which shows how you can use Windows 8 and Azure. I've also talked, of course, about things like graphics, media, hardware devices, and so on and so forth. And then we talked a little bit about this already, is what languages we're going to be supporting going forward. JavaScript, VB, C#, C and C++, okay? Those are the languages we're going to be supporting on the Metro platform. And then the front end of that, HTML5, CSS3, if you're in the JavaScript space, XAML, if you're in C and C++. This is interesting. C++ programmers now can use XAML. I don't know if you know this. Anybody know the answer? There is actually a Microsoft product already shipping which supports C, C++, and XAML. Anybody know what it is? Yeah, it's actually Windows CE 7. About 18 months ago, they started to ship this C++ and XAML support. not Silverlight, C++ and XAML. And there's no .NET underneath it. It was quite interesting how they'd done it. So it was an interesting application. I was working with the embedded people at the time, and I thought it was very cool. I thought it was a very cool piece of technology. Just an interesting story on this. It allowed you to build Metro-type applications very easily in C++. And we got a new product manager in, PM, and he decided to build an application. So he went and decided to build himself a new front eye for Windows CE. And he took it off to Taipei. There's a big show in Taipei over in China. And he took this demonstration off and showed it at Taipei. Unfortunately, it was extremely close to what we were doing with Windows 8. And he just didn't know, right? And so he got very told very quickly. Of course, the press saw it. And they said, hey, this is a really cool UI. C++, XAML, you know, this is a really nice way of writing things. And he had to take it down very, very quickly. So there was a brief flurry in the press, and nobody actually realized at the time, but it was actually very close to what we were doing with Windows 8, and he just didn't know, right? So sometimes these things, you know, good ideas come and they bubble up in multiple different places, even within a single company. Obviously, on top of that, you can then go and build yourself some Metro-style applications. Okay, so that's what the platform looks like, and we're going to be drilling into each part of this in more detail today. Okay, so I talked about Hello World in C++. Let's have a look at the... That's strange. Okay, this was the demo I did a little while ago. I'm sorry about that. So this is what we're seeing here is that what we saw in that demo I did a little while ago. I think I talked about most of this stuff. XAML used from C++. And the RT APIs are all native, so you can use them straight from a native language. Another comment there is portable C++ code. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, you can take your C++ code and put it onto Metro. You have to remember, of course, that you now need to interface to XAML, so it's not sort of portable in terms of you don't have to make any changes. You have to make some changes for the UI, but it's portable insofar as the compute side of things doesn't change very much. Okay, so we look at the API set that WinIT is going to provide. First of all, we have a set of basic fundamental services at the bottom. Application services, memory management, authentication, sort of stuff you expect to have. Cryptography, globalization, all those sort of functions down at the bottom here. We have a set of media services. And media is very, very important in the scenarios we're looking at. Clearly, people want to be able to do things like TV and movie services on Windows 8 Metro, and we need to be able to support streaming on those, things like smooth streaming. I think we've just announced something in that space. Did you see an announcement?
Yes.
Okay. Right, so yes, thank you. It's very difficult working corporate because I work with people who are working on unannounced products all the time, and sometimes I'm not quite sure where we are in the announcement cycle, if you see what I mean. So the guy in the office next door to me actually is working on smooth streaming. So I've been talking to him for about it for the last 18 months, but we hadn't actually announced anything. And so I sometimes have to go, have we announced that? So thank you very much. We have just announced support for smooth streaming in Windows 8. We've got an SDK out there as well. So again, it's very important for us. It's actually been quite a difficult challenge to do the whole codec type functionality. Again, the guy in the next office has been working on it, so I know quite what a challenge it's been. And it's really, really mainly around standards rather than anything else. Next, as I say, we're going to have device support on top of that. And in particular, the new devices that we're seeing, accelerometers, gyros, magnetometers, GPSs, all those sort of things that are coming out in the devices. We have to support all those. And, you know, things like NFC, of course, is in there as well. Touch, multi-touch. And so on and so forth. There was a demonstration recently of a screen about this size, touch screen of about this size, if you saw it. It's actually got like 100 touch points, I think, or something like that, wasn't it? You were there, weren't you? 98 touch points, sorry. So, yeah, we're too short of 100, eh? But obviously we've got to be able to support multi-touch. That is multi-touch. Communications and data. We need to be able to support all the standard communication protocols. A couple of things I want to pull out in this is this whole area of contracts. We need to have the ability for applications to have contracts with other applications to do things like sharing, and I'll talk about that in a lot more detail as well, how we make sure that works. Notifications, we need a notification mechanism. Clearly, again, when you have a Windows, your application, you need to be able to put a post, a pop-up or a toast or something if something's happening. You could see the Meta application I showed you, it had things changing in the on the actual tile itself. The tile itself was active. You also need to have an asynchronous notification mechanism, and we're providing that. I'll talk about that in more detail as well. So those are the sort of things we've got to provide. And then finally, of course, is the user interface side of things. XAML, HTML, the most important things. Oh, one I forgot to mention is DirectX. So if you're a games, how many people do games programming here? Just a quick one. I look after games programming for developer, the developer side of games programming. So I end up looking after all sorts of odds and ends. And this is another one I have is actually games programming for indie games. So I did quite a lot of games programming. I'm not a games player myself. I actually don't like them very much. But I have to do quite a lot of programming as part of the job in this space, and I have to know what's going on. So we have support for DirectX. So you can write C++, DirectX, and it will go, you know, as fast as possible. Right? You've got nothing between you and the hardware, really, or very little between you and the hardware. And in fact, that pinball game you saw was a DirectX game. I've got another game that I'd like to show you if I have a chance. Which is one I wrote, which is actually in HTML, and actually works pretty fast as well. Go ahead.
What about XNA or managed directives of some sort?
What about XNA is the question. I was hoping there weren't that many games people here, you see, so they were going to ask that question. So we support XNA today on the phone, as you're aware. XNA doesn't come from Windows Group. XNA actually comes from the games division, IEB, inside Microsoft. It's a technology that we're supporting through IEB, but at the moment there's no plans to actually have it running on the Metro side of things. It runs, of course, on desktop mode, as ever, but at the moment there's no plans to actually getting work on the Metro side. Yeah. one of the things about XNA, this is a personal opinion of games, right? Games has moved a long way from the days that XNA supported, right? So XNA supports the games loop, and it supports a pipeline, content pipeline, and sprite and collision detection. Pretty much that's it, right? Nowadays, if you look at the games like that pinball game or Cut the Rope, which is another game on there, these games are all physics-based games. Running physics-based games, you need a lot of libraries. There's no reason why the library, the people out there that are writing games engines, so, you know, Unity, those people, there's no reason why they can't run Unity or Unreal to DirectX. And I feel sure, I don't know because I've not talked to those people, but I feel sure they're looking at providing, let's say, things like Unity and Unreal games engine support to DirectX under Windows 8 for Metro. And then you can pick those libraries up and go and start building those sort of games with that sort of high level physics. So, you know, inside the company, and I'd be interested if you've got any feedback on this, inside the company there's like, well, those guys are doing a really good job, you know, of providing support on the platform today. Do we really need to spend a lot of time in bringing XNA up to the same sort of level, or should we support those guys? It's always a problem. When you're working, providing a platform with application vendors such as yourselves, is how much do we do and how much do we give to you to make your business out of, yeah? It's my feeling, my personal feelings in the company, my personal feeling is that, as I say, things like Unity Unreal are doing a good job. It's a very specialist area, and that we should support them rather than trying to compete against them. No, because things like Unreal and Unity, if you're designing in those, you use their own language. I can't remember the language they use offhand, but that's a much higher level language that they're using. And they interface, those are all written in C++. Well, that's not true, Unity isn't, but Unreal certainly is written in C++, and the Unreal people, I think, are also converting. Perhaps I shouldn't have said that. You know, so basically, no, from you as a games point of view, you actually write in the high level language of those execution engines, right? Absolutely.
Is the .NET version dated, or it's still for?
Sorry, which .NET version? Right, so on Windows 7 desktop mode, you absolutely support .NET. Yeah, and it's 4.5. And this is 4.5 actually under this as well.
And only in desktop mode?
It's actually, no. So you can run .NET in desktop mode, absolutely, as is today. Now, if you're writing a Metro application, you really need to go through WinRT. And what happens is WinRT will pass it through to .NET. The reason is that WinRT provides all the sort of asynchronous mechanisms we're going to be talking about later on that you need in order to make sure that you get the sort of performance I was showing earlier on. So there's a big debate about runtimes, you know, and the biggest issue with runtimes is the whole area of garbage collection. When the garbage collector kicks in, then things stop, right? And unfortunately, if you're trying to do this with your finger and everything stops, that's not very good. Now, in the XNA case, I thought I was going to, XNA is built on top of .NET. In the XNA case, I thought that was going to be a problem as well. But actually, what the games programmers do is they know this problem, and they always defer the garbage collection until they get to the point where they're changing a level or something. So they get around the problem, because otherwise all the games would jitter as well. So it is possible to get around the problems, and basically WinRT is doing that for you. WinRT is using the asynchronous mechanisms to make sure that you get this fast and fluid response rather than, you know, you having to manage things like the garbage collection. So bottom line is yes, but it'll be there, but you shouldn't use it. If you're using Metro, you should be doing RT.
Another question regarding that, if I have a legacy control, and that control is a WinForm control, and I want to put it within XAML as a control host or something like that.
You can build your, that's a much more complicated question, right? I would like to get on. I'm probably getting behind by now. So if you want, I can catch you up on later on that. You'd have to take the WinForms. You can build your own control at the bottom, right? And I'll talk about that. And actually, you can, nicely enough, with WinRT, you can write your control in any language and then interface that to. What you do with the WinForms part, you obviously have to change. Yeah? Quick answer to a complex question. Okay, so I showed the demo earlier of what RT looks like when it's being called from C++. Let's just quickly go and have a look at the same thing, similar sort of thing from C#. Thank you very much. Yes, if you noticed that, please tell me. Okay, so here's some pointers. So here's I apologize for this machine. It's not a very powerful machine. So what this is exactly the same sort of thing, but now it's running from it's running from C#, and it's running to the WinRT set of APIs. Not normally as slow as this. Okay. Okay, so I'll start off with the top page anyway. Same piece of XML on the top. Where's it gone? Okay, so again, exactly the same thing. Click me, the button click, same sort of hello world type application. I'm actually putting an image up afterwards. So this actually does a little bit more than that. Okay, and the actual event handler in this case. Okay, so this is the actual event handler, and again, it's very similar. You know, I'm just putting up a message dialog, and you can see this is using standard C# type notation. Do you want to open a file? I put up a couple of commands, whether I want, you know, whether I want to open it or not. And then I just do a little test here. And I use a thing called the file picker, okay, in here. And the file picker allows me to go and pick a particular file. And this is part of WinRT. This is the part of the file system navigation. It comes as part of it, WinRT. So it's it provides all this functionality for you. A couple of things I want to show in this is, again, we have these async keywords in here. So pretty well, any time you're going to use any resource on the machine. So any time you're going to go to the file system, any time you're going to go to the network, use the async keyword, and then that actually effectively terminate. Well, it suspends the process, this particular thread, lets the machine get on and do the UI response, and then comes back when something actually happens. And this, it comes back to this await keyword here and down at the bottom, right? So that's what the this little program does. Let's say a very simple hello world. It does a little bit more because what it allows me to do is go and pick up a file out of my file system and display it. Okay, same sort of thing as before, click me button. But now you'll see that it's come up with a little dialogue. Do you want to open a file? I say yes. Now this is all actually being done by Windows at this point. So WinRT fires up that picker, and the picker goes and opens up the files and says, which file do you want? So all this functionality here, the ability to scroll through the pictures, select a particular picture, go up and down through the file system, that's all actually now being done by Windows, right? So I can pick one of those up, and what happens at this point is it just returns it back to my program and puts it up in that image space. So very simple program. It's actually, not only does that work in your file system, it will actually work up into the cloud as well. So if you're using SkyDrive or using Facebook or something like that, exactly the same piece of code will work. And it will actually go and pull the pictures down from Facebook. No additional programming required by you. It's actually all provided by Windows. And as you can see, it literally, what it's doing here, picks the file, okay, waits for it to come back here, and then just puts it, actually generates the actual picture to put on the display and uses XAML to stick it back up on the display. Really, really simple. This time I will remember to stop
it. What happens if you're in a sandbox environment?
Sorry?
If you're in a sandbox environment, how do you open a file outside your application?
WinRT will do that for you, and what it does is it works out what permissions you've got, and I'll come back to that question later on if I may. But basically, you have a manifest. So all WinRT programs have a manifest set of capabilities. Let me show you. Okay? So actually, you have this thing called the manifest. Here we are. Okay, and in this manifest, it says what this is allowed to do and what it isn't allowed to do. Okay? So here's your capabilities. Oh, by the way, it also allows you to say what formats you support, you know, which types of tablets you want to support, and so on and so forth, where you want to put your logos. All this stuff is packaged up as part of the manifest and gets shipped back up to the store. But one of the things you can do is you set what capabilities, i.e. what this particular application is allowed to do, right? And so you can say in here, obviously this can, when I talked about being able to go and access things on Facebook, for instance, clearly it needs internet client access. You have to click in here. Now what will happen is when this application actually runs the first time, Windows will put a pop-up and says, which will say, this application is going to use the internet. Do you want to go and use the internet? Do you want to allow it to do that? And the user has to say yes, and then the application will run, okay? And this is all done, again, by Visual Studio to provide the manifest itself, and at runtime by WinRT. The other thing I wanted to show you in here very quickly is if you look down through this output window here, you'll see this is the standard standard .NET libraries in here, okay? It's actually 4.5 it's running. So, you know, it's actually just going away and running a standard .NET. This is very standard C# type syntax running onto a very standard C type architecture underneath. Okay, so what did we see? Key thing, asynchronous, right? You have to make everything asynchronous, otherwise it will jam the machine. Again, it's providing you access to all these underlying services, but in a safe way. So the application, people know what their application is going to do. It's all guaranteed. Windows provides all that for you. And it feels very natural in any language. Oh, and the other key thing is that all languages are actually pretty much running as close as possible to the hardware. So things like even, and DirectX is in here as well, of course, if you run to DirectX. The point here is that we're actually trying to make sure each of these languages run as native, so that you get the maximum performance. Now, clearly in some scenarios, C++ will be a better way of writing programs than C# or JavaScript. But in general, we're trying to make the execution as fast as possible. So performance is really, really important. And all of them are pretty close in terms of the performance that you're going to see from them. So you know, the days of when you decided one language over another because of performance are going away. So how do we do this? How do we actually manage this, make this happen? We have this thing we call projections. And basically what happens here is that when you write an application, be it C++ or C# or HTML, JavaScript, what we do is we actually wrap that up. We put a thing called a projector on the front, which is actually a little shim. Okay, and then that shim actually is then packaged up to make the whole thing into a Windows runtime object over on the left-hand side, which then runs. Now, when we do that, we actually pull out a set of data. I showed you a little bit of the capabilities data, for instance. We pull out a whole bunch of data that's associated with your application. So, and we call it, it's called Windows metadata. So it's associated with each of the applications. And it tells the linkages that's required and so on and so forth. It's actually fairly complex under the hood how it all works. But from your point of view, all you have to do is make the WinRT calls. We put all the shims in. We do all the different mappings that are required in order to, and we keep a list of all those along with your application so that we know how it all ties together. Of course, with this, it means that you can actually take a control, build your own control in any language you want, and then call it from any other language. And you can actually do that. I have a demo, I'm not going to do it. But basically what it does is it allows you to write a little C# control and then go and call that from JavaScript or call it from C++, right, from within the language. And RT does all the wrapping to make that work. And that's applicable from any language. So you can write a JavaScript component and then call that from any other language as well. Okay, so that's talked about the runtime platform. Let's talk about the user experience. We have these tenets, these ideas about what we need to make sure the UI looks like in order for it to fit in with all the other Metro apps and have a good performance and a good look and feel to it. And so these are the components you need to think about when you're building a Metro style app. First of all, it should have the design that you see, this tile Metro type design. I'm going to talk about that in the next session in much more detail. Fast and fluid, we've already talked about that. It must make sure it doesn't jam anything in the machine. The UI must be quick and very flexible and very fluid. It's really, really important, especially on tablet-based machines. If the thing stutters and is juttery, it is very, very bad indeed. Snap and scale. I haven't shown snap because my machine doesn't support it, but you can actually have more than one screen. In general, a Metro app comes up, it's full screen. You can have the case where you have sort of two-thirds of the screen of one application and one-third of the screen of the other application. And say, this little tablet isn't got a big enough screen to support that. But it does mean that you can have two applications running side by side, snap them in place. And of course, when you do that, you've got to make sure that they scale. So if you have an application that's two-thirds of the screen and then becomes one-third, it has to scale properly as well. And we're providing a lot of templates to help you do that and do it automatically. It's also true if you go up on screen resolution. Again, as the screen resolution gets bigger, very often you can put more and more content up there. But in some cases, that's not true. You need to, you don't want to put more tiles on a chessboard, for instance, right? I mean, that would not be applicable. So what you can do is we allow you to scale, and we provide a lot of support for scaling as well. Contracts, again, the more you can support things like share and search, then the better the experience it is for the user, the more they'll use the application, the more they'll use the platform. A great tile. If your tile is attractive and is updated, then people will go to use your application more. Very simple, but actually very powerful. Again, alive, make sure the tiles are updated and feel connected. So Most applications have some sort of back-end connection. Obviously, try and update those from the back-end connection. I showed the MSNBC application. Clearly, that's updated with the news more or less in real time. But obviously, make sure it works when you go offline as well. In fact, Windows RT does a lot of that work for you, and actually, it makes it feel very different. When you go offline with RT, it's almost not noticeable, really. Roaming the cloud. I talked a little bit about some of those application settings. There's a whole host of settings, actually, that the user puts in about what they're sharing, what the applications is doing, and so on and so forth, what applications are loaded. You really want those to go to your other machines. If you're using it on one machine, you get another machine, or you have another machine at home, or so on and so forth, you want to make sure your application settings and your user settings get roamed. Windows WinRT does that for you. Windows Metro does that for you. It's actually done through the Live ID. So you log on with Windows Metro, you log on to the Live ID, and a lot of that Windows metadata I was talking about, the capabilities settings, actually gets sent back up to your Live ID. And then as you log on to the Live ID from somewhere else, it comes back down on the other side. So that's how that actually works. And then Metro principles are, again, how you design. I'll talk about that in more detail. Finally, Windows Store on the store side of things. Let me just show you the store quickly. Okay, so this is the Windows Store. One of the most important things as far as the store is concerned is discoverability. One of the most important things you will find, I think, also for your applications is discoverability. It's very important that people are able to find your applications. So, of course, we do all the standard sort of things that you do for discoverability. You know, top paid, ratings, rankings, recommendations, all those sort of things come up, and we bubble those up to the top. We put up, obviously, the tile so that people can see what it is. We put up information about the particular applications. How good is it? Okay. So, and you can go and have a look and decide what particular applications you want. We haven't got any paid in here, yes. These are all free at the moment, so help yourselves. Sets of applications. These are the sort of applications we have in the store at the moment. There's a fair number already, and there's more every day. So we're going to provide that. We're also going to provide a whole host of different business models. At the moment, they're all free, but we're going to provide all the standard business models, advertising, paid, trials, you name it. This has actually come mainly from the games people. Games people are quite a long way ahead in terms of what they're providing. And we've certainly used a lot of that experience we've had from the Xbox to make sure that we support all the models that you can possibly think of. Okay. So, I talked a little bit about this new execution model, and I'm just going to cover it in more detail now. One of the key things about a Metro application is it goes through a set of transitions. This is the application model. When it's running, when it's on the screen, it's running. When it goes off the screen, because another application comes up, it actually goes into a suspended state. It takes about 5 milliseconds, actually, period, when it's behind, just so you as an application provider, as a designer, can actually take the information you need and make sure it's stored somewhere, back up in the metadata or wherever. So when you flip off the screen, we save most of the state. Any state that you need to save, you need to save as well. And it goes into the suspended application mode. And now, when I flipped in from the left, you can see all the different applications that were in suspended mode. They were flipping back in to the running mode, doing this resume type of thing. If the machine gets full, there's too many applications running, then it will start to terminate applications, and the applications will be taken off the list. The last one, the one that's furthest back in time will be taken off, terminated, and then when the user comes back in, they have to then effectively reload that application. So that's how that works. Similarly with transitions, coming back to the sandboxing question earlier, obviously we allowed you access to the standard OS resources like the user data in your application, we allowed that. But if you go and access anything else, things like devices or the file system or the internet or something like that, we go through a broker. This is how we provide the sandboxing. You actually go to the broker, and the broker goes and checks and looks in the capabilities list, APEX file, sees if you've got the ability, you're allowed to do that, and it will go, if you have got the ability and been allowed to do it, will then allow you to go and make that access. So that's how your process is isolated. The only difference to that is if you're trying to talk to another process through one of these contracts, through share, and a share contract between two processors, then you can do that. Actually, this picture shows it being talked directly. That's not actually quite how it works. It actually, of course, goes to the operating system, up to RT, and RT then passes it out to the second processor. But what it means is that if you have an application, you are isolated, and you can run safely and securely with all the permissions that you should have, and you're not going to go out and destroy either the rest of the machine or somebody else's application. You know, you can't do that with the WinRT model. And this is, I think, the same sort of thing. Obviously, you can access your own data in your application. If you want to go and get external data, user data, then again, you need to go through the broker and get permissions to do that. Finally, I talked a little bit about roaming. You take your information from your application, it goes to your local storage, and then WinRT in the background goes and roams that back up to the live ID. And then, of course, if you go on another machine, it roams it back down again when you log on. And you then have the ability to sync different IDs together and keep the information in those IDs synchronized. So, for instance, that machine has both my work ID and my live ID on it, and it synchronizes the data from both of them. Okay, so that's pretty much the end of the application execution side of things. What we're trying to do with WinRT in terms of application execution is, first of all, make sure the user is confident about the application. They're confident that the application isn't going to go and access something it shouldn't. It's not going to stop machine working. It's not going to be malware of any sort. It's going to be isolated from the other things in there. And the user has control over what that application does. So that's the first thing. We want the users to feel confident in any application they're running in their machine. Second is it needs to be connected. So obviously we're going to support things like roaming and data access. And again, data access, as I showed you, it can be both the file system on your machine, it can be out to your SkyDrive, it can be to something like a Facebook account. And then finally, everything is going to is designed to be as fast as possible. It all feels like native. It is actually running native. And so you get the native sort of performance. There's nothing that's getting in the way. You actually get the most maximum performance out of every single language that you're using. Okay, so talked a little bit about, first of all, what Windows looks like for consumers. Showed you that very quickly. And now a bit about what it means for developers, how we've changed the application model. I'm going to go into more detail in the rest of the day on what that looks like from a development perspective. I think that's probably time for break, is it? I'm not sure.